This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Bookends. Kia ora and welcome to Bookends with Ruth Todd and Maureen Rout, our first program for 2019. And the New Zealand Occam Book Awards have just been announced, the long list that is, and we were very excited to see local writer Anna Rogers in the non-fiction category. We'll be playing finalists over the next few weeks because Ruth and I together have interviewed quite a number of them. And it's a very exciting list if you want to Google it and go and see who's on. So we thought for our first program, we'd play the interview that I did with Anna about her book late last year. With Them Through Hell is a very extensive book about the New Zealand medical services in the First World War. It's been written by Anna Rogers, who's well known to us. She's a book editor and a historical writer. And she's recently written a book about the New Zealand nurses at war called While You Were Away. Anna, this was a commissioned work. Was it a work that you were looking to do, or were you? How did you feel when you were asked to do it?
Well, in fact, it was advertised, Maureen, so I did have a chance to think about whether I did, and I was quite excited, really, and partly because of the nurse's book, a chance to extend beyond that to look at all the medical services. So I put my name in the hat and went off for an interview, and I was lucky enough to get the job. So it's been a real privilege to do.
This is a series of books that have come out.
It's part of the Kent, New Zealand Centenary History Programme, and there are 14 titles in the end. So it's a loose series covering different aspects of the First World War.
And this is an area that so deserves a spotlight put upon it, isn't it? I was expecting a very thorough book because I know you're a thorough and good writer. I don't think I was expecting to be so engrossed in it.
I completely understand. That's very kind of you. I think, well, the first thing to say is that the only book that's been written on the subject before was done in 1924. So there was a bit of ground to cover. That book makes no mention, for instance, of the nurses, or almost none. They might pretty well not have been there. It doesn't cover the vets, the dentists, various other aspects, which this book does. What I think perhaps I hope caught your interest, and what I wanted to do was to hear the people's voices. So I went to as many primary sources of letters and diaries and so on, because to me that's what makes you feel it and understand it and see it.
And there's the difference between a 1924
Indeed.
Work and a
yes.
2018
yes.
work,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes. I mean, the 1924 man, to be fair, he did a pretty good job. He's given a very short time to do it, but it's a different time. He served in the war himself. He's under different constraints. Mm. And it is a very different kind of history, yes. Mm.
And we have access in different ways now because, you know, for you to do your research, was it, you know, there was as much visits to libraries and repositories yes. of things as it was online, I
Absolutely,
imagine.
Absolutely, because yeah. all the personnel records are available online. Mm. And, of course, Papers Past is the most magnificent resource to be able to look up, because a lot of people, proud parents, would receive letters from their sons and daughters who were away in the medical corps or nursing or doctors, and they would take them around to the newspaper office and say, I got a letter from my son or my daughter, let's put it in. So you get a whole letter just sitting there in the newspaper that you can use, and there's the voice. So that was a fabulous resource.
Mm. Yes. And you're quite right. What comes through is the stories of the people who are at all levels, not just the officers and the
exactly.
the those high up in the hierarchy, but it's hearing from people who were stretcher bearers.
Exactly. They're my new heroes.
Yes.
And of course, a lot of those they're not trained men. I mean, they had minimal training before they left, but they could have been a clerk or a railway worker, and then here you are suddenly in the middle of no man's land, slogging through the mud, carrying a stretcher while somebody's firing at you. Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. You were as open to being wounded as anyone else.
Yes.
The way that you've laid it out and the way the book has been constructed makes it such a pleasure to read doesn't it?
Thank you. I'm so pleased. That took a lot of thought. It was hard to know whether to go chronologically, which would have meant a lot of repetition, and I decided, well, it's probably better to follow through the earlier parts so that you particularly understand the chaos of Gallipoli. So it roughly follows the way the battles went and then splits up into dealing with the various types of personnel,
And that's, lovely chapter headings like holy men and healing hands. Teeth trouble.
Oh, yes, and dentistry.
Who knew?
I know.
Exactly.
It never actually, this is a very silly thing to say, it never actually occurred to me that you can't go to war if you can't eat properly. Because if you can't eat, you're no good to anybody because you're not a...
You're not a functioning person, are you? Mm. And there's one thing I must say. I saw the Peter Jackson movie, and I think you would have picked it up in black and white as well, but what comes across is the most terrible teeth of the soldiers.
Absolutely.
Which I think we knew. But, you talk about people having to grind those bully beef.
Those terrible biscuits, and find some liquid to make that. That's one of my, if you can have a pet fact from this book, mine might be that you could get a pair of dentures made on Gallipoli.
Yes.
I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it? In those conditions. Yes. Now, that more poor man who lost his top set of false teeth and then his bottom set, and as you say, is left to becoming weaker and weaker through lack of sustenance and grinding up those terrible biscuits and trying to,
And the amount of time and effort that must have gone into putting those dentures together.
When you think of the equipment too.
Yes.
These huge, great chairs and vulcanizers for making the whatever you do with a vulcanizer. So,
I was staggered at the fact that they had X-ray.
Me too. Mm. Yes. I had an idea that they had used X-rays, but not to such a wide extent. No.
They had them in all sorts of remarkable places, didn't they?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then you're talking about not just the, you lay out very clearly how there were all these staged places that the wounded came into.
Yes, the evacuation chamber.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Where they were first staunching blood and trying to deal with carnage, and then it went on and on and on. And then, of course, people who were shipped back to England before they were shipped and all those places that existed for them in the peace and quiet of the countryside.
Mm. Yes.
But another thing that I found extraordinary too was the those who were serving in the desert.
Yes.
And the use of things like camels to take the wounded back.
It's a really worse thing. People would, I think, rather have walked or done something else. Yes, those terrible cassoulet slinging you on each side of a camel. So imagine if you've got a compound fracture with a bone sticking out of your thigh and then they put you on the side of a camel and take you for miles. That was a cruel campaign.
Wasn't it a cruel campaign?
They're the lost people of this war in a way, like the Pacific War was the lost war of the Second World War. Yes, cruel place.
So your emotions as you're finding these things out, as well as, using your writerly skills and your editorial skills, but then at the same time, having to read all these.
You have to, as you would understand, you have to distance yourself a bit. And in a way, you get into that world and in some ways you come to accept it. But every now and then there'll be something that jumps out. There's a young man in there called Fred Crum. He's one of my favourites. Fred was only 22. He was shot in the desert, just as you're describing, in an air raid. And he was nothing special. He was in the mounted field ambulance. He was doing his best. He was a bit of a lad. And you suddenly think, he's younger than my nephews. And he's minding his own business, looking after his horse in the desert, and a plane comes out of the sky and kills him. And that was one thing that really kept astonishing me, was how young a lot of the men are, both the carers and the wounded. the nurses sometimes had to be a little older. Some of the surgeons were older, but a lot of the medics and a lot of the men serving were just boys.
Weren't they? Frightened boys. Cannon fodder indeed.
Mm-hmm. And so just every now and then something would jump out and really hit you, or the way somebody writes something down. But overall, I mean, I often explain to people anxiously that I'm not interested in war in itself. I hate it. I'm interested in the effect of war on people, and particularly unsung people like this. But I emerge from this thinking, how could you ever have contemplated fighting another war? I understand you have a demagogue like Hitler, but it was so terrible.
Yes.
And there's no glory. That's the other thing I got to thinking a lot about, because the commemoration of these 4 years has thrown up so much, you know, heroism, sacrifice, laid down his life. It's nonsense, a lot of it.
Yes, the reality is far grimmer, bleaker.
It's much grimmer. And the heroism lies with the people who did the hard things when they didn't want to, in my view, and a lot of my people in this book come into that category.
Yes, indeed. Mm. And the part four, of course, is the maimed and the mended, and, you know, what they came back to and what they brought with them from overseas. And then, as we all know, I mean, it's nothing new here, the effects on the families and friends.
Yes. A long shadow, very long shadow. Yes, some of those men with what we now know as post-traumatic stress disorder, of course, or syndrome, they called it shell shock quite often, or neurasthenia, or all sorts of other names. Yes, wives lying there while their husbands screamed with nightmares for years afterwards, and the ones who came back with TB and weren't allowed to eat with their families. And
those who had VD.
New Zealand, unfortunately, had one of the highest VD rates in the First World War, despite Etty Rout's best efforts.
Yes, she did her best. She certainly did. But they were kept under lock and guard.
If there was a hospital or a camp, you'd have a separate VD. I don't quite know what they thought they were going to do, but they were all locked up in the barbed wire.
And you moved the venereals, they used to call them.
Yes, they'd move them separately.
What a stigma that must have been when they came back, because it happened when they got back here as well. They were kept like lepers, weren't they?
Yes, actually out on an island in one case, absolutely.
So, that's the extraordinary thing of a book like this, is that it's so full of interesting and appalling facts and stories. And as we said, the way it's laid out makes it so accessible.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear you say that. As I say, it was quite a long process getting that structure right, so I'm very glad it works.
Yes, it does. It does indeed. There were things that you couldn't help but be amused at. There was some treatment that had some amazing name. I'm looking for my... People can hear this. I'm looking for my piece of paper, which is...
Was it the one that dripped?
Here it was. There were strange things like electrical devices, something called descending galvanism.
I know, yes. It's better not to ask, I decided.
Yes,
I know.
They did do their best,
didn't they? That was all what we would now call physiotherapy, and of course they called it massage, but it was huge numbers of people doing that. And you see, you know, quite a lot of photos of people with their feet in buckets and strange electrical... It all looks very terrifying. But, so descending galvanism seems to be something that... They were going to do that to one of the amputees, I think.
They were. He said, rather funny for this new treatment, I have to have all the hair off the back of my head.
Yes.
Looks decidedly odd.
Yes. Well, I expect they were going to put, electrodes of some sort
of
onto
some
him.
Sort. Yes.
And some of the treatments, as you would have picked up for, shell shock and neurasthenia, some of the ones done in Britain were just terrifying.
Verging on the, insane themselves.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, the insane helping the so-called insane, yes.
And, of course, you've covered the New Zealand nurses, but there were women in all sorts of levels of...
Yes. Well, women doctors, of course. Agnes Bennett and Jessie Scott and an amazing group of them. And then, of course, Etty Rout's Volunteer Sisterhood, which, as you say, sits outside the New Zealand Army Nursing Service, but they did amazing work. and also the volunteer aid detachment. So those are untrained nursing staff. That's what Vera Briffin was. She was a VAD.
Yes.
And, of course, even though they were untrained, they ended up quite often. Oh. If they were working in a hospital, you know, you can see Vera Briffin was actually doing work at nursing level. Yeah, so, and you have a lot of women as masseuses.
Yes, that's right.
And, yes, so they are working in a lot of different areas, yes.
And a lot of them very close to the action too,
yes,
they?
Yes, they weren't strictly allowed in the front line, but they often say, I can hear the bombs.
Mm.
And often, of course, they would put a hospital near a railway station because that's where the patients arrive, but a railway station looks like a good place to bomb.
Surely does.
If you're the enemy.
Yes.
So, and
they often had difficulty coming back into civilian life too, didn't they?
Yes. Well, they have the double whammy of them not quite thinking that the land settlement scheme for soldiers was open to the nurses, but the people at the land settlement, whatever
yes,
it was.
Yes, it was somebody who got herself
I don't think we'll really be able to help you. Yeah, one or two did. They did things like beekeeping, and somebody did get their piece of land, and Liz wrote about how she was getting some chickens and she's planted this and that. But they were the exception, yes. And then, of course, you have just the requirements of all the mores of the time, which say that if you're the unmarried daughter, and most of these were unmarried women coming home as nurses, you look after the parents or you look after your siblings. There's one woman in there, Fanny Speedy, one of my favourite nurses, who wanted to stay in England but had to come home with her family.
Yes, yes. Mm. That was abruptly cut off for a lot of them, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So much to read about vets, of course.
Yes.
You know, we're talking about people being carried on camels. Well, the camels had to be taken care of, even though the vets probably had never met a camel.
They'd never seen one of those. They were good on horses, but nobody knew much about camels, no? So somebody had to swat up on camels. Yes,
and chiropodists. I didn't realise they'd gone to war.
Well, there's another thing to
see.
Exactly. Not only do you have to be able to eat, but you have to be able to march. Yes, I know. Yeah, so every now and then I thought, I never thought I'd be writing about this, I would think quite often, but fascinating.
No, it certainly is. And I have to congratulate you on making, well, it was always going to be an interesting topic, wasn't it? But making it exceptionally interesting and readable and doing great honour to all those people. From the top of the line to the larger-than-life Fred Hornibrook, who massaged his way through dozens of patients a day, singing favourites like "The Bells of Hell Go Ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me."
Yes,
they needed a lot of that, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, it's his future husband. Yes. Exactly, they did. You needed whatever fun you could find. Yes.
Exactly. So, Anna, in all this research and reading and writing, tell me a couple of the things that really took you by surprise that you weren't anticipating.
Oh, gosh. I think one of them would be those unexpected aspects, such as the importance of dentistry, chiropody, pharmacists, they had to know what they were doing, and sometimes they didn't. Those things took me by surprise in what was being done. Other things to point out, I think, which also struck me, were the medical advances. That's one of the great ironies of war, that medical advances are made while you're...
Yes, of course, we haven't covered...
While you're destroying
plastic
destroying
surgery
people, and plastic
and things
surgery
like
causes
that.
A
yeah.
huge one. So those things stood out for me. I think what surprised me most is... really the sheer endurance of those people. I knew from working on a book about the nurses how long the hours worked were, but when you add in the nurses, the doctors, stretcher bearers, orderlies, all those people in the chain of evacuation that we talked about before, where you start the regimental aid post and you work your way through, they're working inhuman hours in terrible conditions, and the sophisticated weaponry in this war meant that the wounds were a lot worse. Nobody, however well-trained they were, had seen wounds this bad. What shrapnel does to a body had never been seen before at that level. So there's a huge shock factor before you start before you start working out how you're going to deal with it.
Yes, and which would have been unexpected
absolutely.
To them.
And you're doing all this without any antibiotics. So subduing infection, that was something that I'd never understood how enormous that was. Mm. So you spend
there was
an awful
some
lot
sort
of time.
Drip thing,
yes,
wasn't
the Carol Dakin system. Yes, yes, very complicated. But of course, actually, for its day, quite remarkable. Mm. Yes, it kept dripping into the wound through little glass tubes, and it was a saline solution. They didn't change
the dressings.
That was its great advantage, that instead of changing dressings, which could be excruciating. There's some quotes in there about men. They called it the agony wagon when they saw it coming with the dressings and the bottles on it. So instead of enduring that, they left these little tubes dripping the sterile solution into the wound. And it promoted the healing, and of course the men were able to be left alone. So that was, but of course that was quite cumbersome.
Yes, so they wouldn't have been able to give it to
other
everyone.
Other pastes and things that they would put on, but enormous advances. And the Thomas splint is the other one that holds the leg so differently, and that made a huge difference. And of course the other things I'd understood partly from the nurse's book, but more with this is how much damage could be done by it before a man got to medical help. The ones who were brought from far away, they had time to get very, very infected, particularly in France, where the ground had been farmed for so long. It's very heavily manured and it's full of anaerobic bacteria, I think they are, and that causes gas gangrene, which is a particularly horrible thing.
And any shrapnel or anything would
the uniform and the earth, and it takes everything into the wound. Sorry, it sounds like a grim catalogue.
But I was also
impressed by the power of hope. I mean, there is still hope there. There's humour and hope and belief in something better. And those people are there because they believe they can make people's lives better. And even the ones who didn't really think they were going to be doing that, the ones who got hauled into the medical corps, by and large, they did their best very bravely under appalling circumstances.
Didn't they?
So I just, I just bow to them, really.
What else can you do? And as you said before, you'd have hoped that this would have been the war to end all wars, but of course we know different.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
The book is called With Them Through Hell, New Zealand Medical Services in the First World War. It's by Anna Rogers and it's published by Massey University Press. And join us, Maureen Rout and Ruth Todd, next Tuesday on Bookends on Plains FM 96.9.